Welcome to Launch, where we explore the world of invention and entrepreneurship. I'm Jim DeBetta, back from a week absence, here with my co-host Ron Reardon and Lee Cantor, our producer. Good morning, guys.
And we really missed you, Jim.
Did you really?
Yes, we did.
Ron missed you more than me.
That's what I figured. And that's all good. That's fine. Okay. So, how was last week, Ron? Good show?
It was good, yeah. We went through several items that inventors should consider before going forward. That's what I call my 41 questions invention assessment, and we made it through about six. I guess.
Yeah.
35 to go.
There's definitely a lot of considerations, that's for sure. Yeah. So,
well, my wife has a request for an invention.
Oh, really?
She wants an entrepreneur to start a business, okay?
I'm listening.
Okay. I think you're probably familiar with the standard man joke. That when you first get married, you know, your bride is in a nice silk nightgown and all like that and all makeup and things like that. But then after you've been married for a while, she's got the fuzzy slippers and the hair and curlers and the mud pack and the sleep shirt that's got a, you know, hole ripped out underneath the armpit. Okay. Well, my wife has a sleep shirt with Mickey Mouse on the front of it that she's been sleeping in for 30 years. And it's seam wear, okay, but it is soft as a baby's butt, okay? It is really comfortable, you know, to sleep in. So what she wants is somebody to come up with sleep shirts that have somehow or another been weathered so that they're
for
nice.
For
30 years. So
that they're beaded nice jeans, like pre-washed.
Right.
Kind of.
Well, you know that the Life is Good brand, their stuff's pretty soft.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, not, I don't know, 30-year soft, but.
But did they make sleep shirts?
I don't know.
That's interesting. You know, I had a
life is good.
Real quick story about an old shirt I had when I was in high school. I used to clean pools for my summer job, and I had this tank top that I wore whenever I worked. And I had this thing for, I guess, from when I was like 13, and now I'm like 17, and it was all torn and ripped. And I loved this thing. And one day we were cleaning. Me and this other guy were cleaning somebody's pool, and it was really hot out. And you know, we used to push each other in, but this one day it was kind of. You know, we were busy, we were in a rush, and at the last second we were done, he went to push me in, and I grabbed his shirt, and then he kind of like grabbed my shirt, and he ripped it. I was so pissed. I was so mad. I mean, I was going to
drown him in
kick
the pool.
His butt, man, but yeah, I know how that is, having something.
Favorite shirt.
An old favorite shirt.
Yep. Yeah, I had one that I used to go wear when I was canoeing and all like that, until my canoeing buddies like, you know, this shirt stinks, you need to get another one.
But that's when it's best, man.
Yeah, I had to
throw it away. Doesn't stink and doesn't have 100 holes in it. What's the point?
I had to throw it away.
Yeah, so that was.
But anyway, that's a market opportunity. If you can make sleep shirts for women that are nice and soft and comfortable, as if they've been around for 30 years, that'd be cool.
Or you could buy a new shirt, just continuously leave it in the washing machine and dry
it
for like 2 weeks straight,
times.
and we might have
the same effect.
Yeah, we'll try to patent the process, Ron, if that's possible. Only you would know the answer to
that. Can we do that?
Maybe.
All right, well, ball's in your court, Ron. We'll have to look into this.
Why don't
and see
you come back to us with some...
We'll have to do some heavy research on the 30-year weathering process.
We have to first go through the 41 points, and when we get through them, if we think it's valid, we'll go ahead and do it. All right, well, today, Ron and I have agreed to talk about something that's very important in the world of inventing, and that is safety issues. Ron, I mean, I think you know that beyond patents and production and marketing and sales, you got to have a safe product.
Yeah, because if your product, one baby swallows a part, then it can actually kill your whole market.
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe to say. Back
and the child.
And the child, yeah, kind of scary. I remember back in the mid-90s when I was involved in the sport optics business, there were definitely laws and rules that were enforced, but not like they are today.
Did you have to have, like, don't look into the sun?
Choking was the big...
That was a hot
thing. And you could get one of these little plastic tubes, and it was a certain diameter, and if your product fit through the tube, then it was not safe from a choking perspective. I think there's a name for that. And you could buy them on websites if you have a product company, but that's just that's the one big thing that they really checked today. I mean, due to last year with all the lead stuff in baby products and food. Remember, it was dog food and cat food or something like that. The food was all tainted coming from China.
Right.
Now the Consumer Product Safety Commission, I think it was in October, passed a new law. So it's not just, hey, we're amending something. I mean, they passed strict laws based on criteria that you have to meet in order to sell products to consumers.
Do you know some of the criteria?
Well, I know the criteria has to do, obviously, lead content or any dangerous chemicals. They have to.
But do they check it? You have to send your product into some government place and they check it out?
Right. And what the process is you have to, well, let me work backwards. Not every product is subject to this. So if you're selling a key ring, that's not something that would normally be hazardous to children. I think the law, and again, I'm kind of rough on the details, but I'm in the ballpark here. I think if it's a product that's sold to somebody that is under 12 years old or would be right. used or consumed by somebody under 12, you have to get what's called a design evaluation, and I'll get to that in a minute. Or if it's obviously food products have to be tested. I mean, there's no way around right. that. A lot of fabric products that can contain certain chemicals.
And then obviously anything that's geared specifically to a child?
Definitely. I mean, those things used to be, there were rules and laws, but they weren't enforced. For example, when I sold a children's line of telescopes and magnifiers and bug loops, none of the retailers asked for anything to substantiate
your claims of safety.
We would say it's safe, and they'd say more or less they'd say it's okay.
I mean, my kid was playing with it yesterday. Yeah, that was the blessing you needed.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it's unfortunate when somebody gets hurt. That's when laws come about. Yeah, it's kind of like when they put up a stop sign in your neighborhood after the warnings have been there, and then somebody gets in an accident. Then someone says, "Okay, maybe we should put a stop sign up."
Right. And one of the stories I heard, true story, that one of these children products had little magnets on it, and the magnets were bigger than this little tube that you were talking about. And, you know, one magnet by itself wasn't that much of a problem, okay, but it was a strong magnet. And so this child swallows one magnet, and then they swallow another magnet. Well, these two magnets find each other down in the intestines, okay, and actually get some of the small intestine together with the magnets on either side and had to have surgery. And so, you know, that product, you know, got pulled off the market pretty darn fast.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So it's, you know, choking is still a big thing. It's really more on the chemical side from what I've read that, you know, what if somebody puts something in their mouth, if a child puts something in their mouth, what are they ingesting? Are there chemicals on the product that when they touch it and then they put their hands in their mouth? I think that's the a big focus of what's going on.
Now, when you're doing having overseas manufacturing, how do you kind of watch that?
Well, I mean, the process today, and again, Ron and I both know Edie Tulchin, the sourcing lady who is very up on all these specific details. In fact, maybe one of these days we should get Edie on here to talk about this because she knows the laws inside and out. And again, I'm not speculating on the laws. I'm just kind of going on what I've read and what I've understood from her and others. But what happens is you have to submit your product to a Consumer Product Safety Commission's accredited design evaluation facility.
Right, and so they kind of bless it and say, okay, it passed, so it's okay.
So in other words, you submit your product samples to them and any other collateral material you have for it. And so if you have a product and then you say it's going to be made of this fabric, you'd have to have a swatch of that fabric sent in. You send it in to them, and they're going to do a very comprehensive review, and they're going to give you back a very lengthy report telling you the things that you need to do in order to be compliant, and then they'll make suggestions for things that you should do, and those things are not necessarily things you have to do. So, and then what you're supposed to do is take those results, and then according to Edie, you'd want to have those results translated into Chinese if you're using a Chinese factory, and then they'll take... You send that stuff to the factory, and then the factory will produce your product based on that criteria to make sure it's safe.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the inventor we had on several weeks ago that had the Binky Bear, that was a that was a really safe product, as I recall, the way it was designed.
Yeah, and she, you know, a lot of people today are aware, and again, because of the internet, they're able to find this information, and they are going forward and being proactive and getting products tested versus being reactive, and of course. Being reactive is you get fined by the government.
And you still have to fix it, so you might as well do it right first.
Right, and if you have a product, imagine having all your products on the shelves of retailers and then they get recalled or you get forced to pull them. I mean,
yeah, that's probably a good conversation with the retailer, right?
Yeah, it's not going to be happy, and it might be lights out for you in terms of your business.
They may not take your next product, right?
Yeah, so, you know, again, after the factory gets this information, they're going to send you samples or what they'll call counter samples, and then you have to review those samples and then make sure and determine that they are indeed made to those specifications.
Right.
And once you go through this whole process, then you can actually say that your products are safe. You can say that with authority.
Because they give you some certification, right?
What's that?
Don't they give these agencies give you some certifications that it's passed a certain thing?
Right. I mean, if you were to go to a store today, you go to any, I don't know, any mass merchant, any baby store, and you pick up any child product, you'll see ASTM certified. You'll see lots of different designations. I don't know what they all specifically are, but yes, right. you can get and obtain a certification based on that particular area of concern.
Right.
So again, I'm kind of going outside of my area of expertise.
But now, overall, do you think this is a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I mean,
because it's more regulation. That's, you know, they're trying to protect people. That's good. But is this method of having to jump through all these kind of legal hoops and regulations, is that a good thing?
That's always a good question. You know, when you're talking about safety, and especially of children, I'm not sure you can have too much regulation.
Really?
But
we'll see about that.
Yeah, that's right. you know, just about anything, you know, especially if you're in the hands of a child, if they start banging it and it starts shattering or whatever, you know, I think any particular product could be dangerous, you know, after a lot of abuse. You know?
Right.
Yeah, I think it's important. You know, look, these are things people should be doing anyway. The only downside is it's expensive. It could be upwards of $1,000 on up to have your product evaluated.
Right.
So it's not.
And that's not. And it could fail.
Right. And then you have to modify. And Ron, that kind of walks into your world, because let's say you have a patent on a product and that patent's very defined, I guess, and now you have to go and alter the product. I don't know what that would even do to the
right.
You know, it's back to it depends. You know, right. If you have to make some, you know, major design change that was critical in your claims, then all of a sudden you've got an unpatented product out there.
Yeah, my guess is that it probably wouldn't be significant. From some of the clients I've had that where they've had to make some changes, it's usually a material. So if you made it out of cotton, now it's got to be made out of something else, but mm-hmm. the structure, the design, the actual look of the product typically doesn't change.
Right, that's right.
But you could have a choking thing where parts are bigger or smaller or designed a certain way. Now they have to be redesigned, and maybe that's a
right. And you know, one safety story that I have, this is about 30 years old, is that Rolls-Royce of England, you know, makes jet engines. Okay,
right.
And they were putting a jet engine together, and they were going to bring it over to the United States for testing and everything before it got put on planes and everything. And one of the tests that the FAA did was what's called the frozen chicken test, where they'd actually put a frozen chicken in a cannon, and they would shoot it at the engine. And if the engine stopped after hitting the frozen chicken went into it, then it failed. And if it kept running after the frozen chicken went in, then it passed.
Right.
And they put, you know, billions of dollars into this engine. They bring it over here. They go through the test, and the frozen chicken goes in. It goes, and it stops. And they had to go back and totally redesign the engine from scratch.
So let that be a lesson. Do your safety testing early on.
But you know that when you're flying, you can feel safe that if any frozen
chickens happen to be airborne, then you're good to go.
Those planes are safe.
It is. It's a scary thing in that when you think about kids, especially little children, if you're an adult, it's one of those buyer beware things. I'm quite sure that a lot of the things we wear and use and eat and consume are probably not 100% safe. But at what point,
right? Where's
do
the
you
line?
Stop?
Right.
So it's tough. But I think with kids or things you eat in particular,
right.
I think that they should be
very
particular about testing.
I read one research report that talked about if we had to have food that was totally void of all insect parts, we would not be eating any food at all.
Right.
Because everything that we've got has got at least minute parts of bugs in
and
it.
And sometimes
now,
not minute.
Are these regulations, are they just for America, or is this like kind of a worldwide standard?
I cannot speak on how they handle things in other countries, but I do know that here they're cracking down.
A lot of rules.
They're cracking down.
Yeah, I would imagine that these rules apply to anything made in the U.S. or imported into the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Now, does the United States typically have more regulation than other countries?
I would say yes, yeah.
It's a big market here, too.
Right. Well, it's 300 million, so it's not like, you know, India or China's got billions.
But, you know, I think per person, and I don't know the exact step, but I think we probably consume more product than anybody in any other country. Or we definitely are in the top couple. We have to be.
Yeah, because I remember one report that when Gorbachev came and visited New York many years ago,
right.
They asked him, you know, what is the thing that totally amazes you about the United States? And he says, I'm totally amazed at how much garbage you guys produce.
I've been over to Europe a bunch of times, and here you go to a supermarket like a Publix or a Kroger, right. And there's so much stuff you could never ever even use or consume all the things right. that they sell. But you go into somewhere in Europe, they don't have these. Well, they have them, but you know, typically you see smaller stores
right, where they have like one of everything. Where here they'll have like right. 20 variations.
It's just not as vast. I mean, yeah, the right. choices aren't.
I can give you one example of the differences between the United States and another country as far as regulations. When I first went to Mexico back in '96, I went to an open air market. And here's this big table with a spice totally covering the table, not in packages. It's just dumped there, and people coming up with their hands and picking it up and
right.
and putting it in a bag. And then there were chickens, you know, just laying there, you know, not packaged or anything.
Right.
And even the one thing that I remember is that here's a fellow selling steaks, and he had all these steaks in front of him, and he had his newspaper on top of the steaks reading the newspaper.
Nice.
And I'm just looking at all this, and I'm just like, boy, you really wouldn't see this in the United States.
I hope not.
Yeah, but somehow it probably works there. Although,
they cook things very well down there.
I'm sure they do.
I'll have that well done. Even my spices, please. Just burn everything. So, but it is a big deal.
But it's just another thing to think of when you're going through this process, that safety is something that's probably not in the top of your mind, but it should be. It's got
to
be on the list.
It has to be now.
Right?
You have to, again, I think 10, 15 years ago, it was definitely at the bottom of people's list, if not at all, unless you had something that was blatantly
right,
potentially dangerous. But today, you have to, it's got to be in your top. Well, Ron, if you have a 41-point list, safety.
Is it on there?
Well, maybe it used to be 41. It's.
I think there are some questions in right. there about, you know, can a baby swallow this?
Right, but see how, like, how he would be saying
right.
it might be something down on the list, but now that's definitely going to jump up the list.
I might have to rearrange the list. You know, and I'm sitting here looking at these chocolates that you always have here. And
not anymore.
Yeah, well, there's still four left. And you'll notice that there's a little plastic, ring around it, you know, so that you can tell if this thing's been opened or not.
Right.
Okay? And you know where that came from.
Yeah, the Tylenol.
Years ago. Yeah. And all of a sudden, that totally changed the packaging industry, and that all of a sudden, everything's got to have a seal on there so that you can tell if it's been tampered with. And,
right.
and this is just a chocolate. Okay.
Right.
But still has that little seal.
But that's one of those instances where something had to happen in a
really
bad way before somebody does it. I think overall it's good that this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's an expense. When you're an inventor starting out, it's an expense that you have to add in, no different than doing patent searches or patent filings
right.
or package design or anything else. It's yet another cost. But it's also a good thing when you have these mom approved or parent approved. There's a lot of different seals you see on,
right.
on baby products, and those help from a marketing perspective, because if you're a parent and you see that,
you feel better.
You feel like, yeah, it's gone through some scrutiny, because I'm sure there are still things that are maybe they're slipping by, or who's really policing all this stuff. I mean,
right.
they're definitely, like you said, cracking down, but who knows when there's millions and millions and millions of products, in total being sold, you can't catch it all.
Right.
Now, these testing areas that, especially if they test baby products, I mean, is a test done by adults, or do they just turn babies loose
baby
or
loose.
Use the products
and
see
like,
what they do?
And they're like, lost another baby. Don't yeah. use that product. Yeah. That one's out.
I have a feeling that the big corporations are definitely, using their daycare centers as testing facilities. But I think these design evaluation firms and I don't know how they test exactly, but I don't think they do anything
with
focus groups or anything.
Right.
My feeling is that they probably...
It's probably, like you said, chemicals, and they're checking chemical reactions.
And sizes.
Sizes,
yeah.
right.
Right, and they look at
and,
it.
And the ability for a part to be
come
removed,
off.
Right. I don't know if they sit there and bang them against the table or
right.
whatever.
And if you're an inventor, I believe if you go to the U.S., the Consumer Product Safety Commission's website, and I don't know what that address is, but if you go there, they list some approved testing facilities that you can call on yourself.
Oh, that's great. Maybe you should post that on the...
Yeah, that would be a good idea, because that is something that... But, it is, again, too, going through that process is not necessarily simple. You have to, when you get those results back, you have to know how to read them.
Right. And sometimes, and then translate them.
Right. And then sometimes having a factory broker or somebody that is in that business of manufacturing and understanding testing can take those results and interpret right. them for you and kind of just give you a bullet point list. Say, here's what you got to do. Boom, boom, boom. You do it. I've looked at some of those reports myself, and some of that stuff is definitely difficult for me to understand. So if you're not in the business at all, it might be very challenging. That's
a good tip for people who are when they're looking around to choosing their right manufacturer rep, and especially if you have a baby product that they have experience in this area about safety and regulations.
Yeah. You know, I heard somebody say that if you're talking with somebody, a potential licensee, and you've got your product all packaged and, you know, shelf ready, that they actually, in the process, some of them will ask you, you know, can I have this? And if you say yes, the first thing they do is they drop it off the table to see what happens to it in the
drop
package.
Test.
The drop test.
The old drop test, sure. I mean, that stuff's done. So, you know, there are different criteria, very different product. I guess every industry's got its little thing that they worry about. I mean, if you have a cell phone, I'm sure cell phone companies drop test their cell phones because,
right.
you know, if every phone busted from,
right, from
2 feet
one
away.
Drop, then you got a problem.
I personally tested my cell phone on the drop test about 10 times. And I was right. like, ooh, slipped out of my hand. Boing.
I've thrown my cell phone down right. In a fit of anger. So is that under the scrutiny
That's
of
the
a drop
throw test?
Test?
That's the throw test. It's a little different.
It's definitely crazy. But, yeah, I think we'll have to post that on the launch website, Ron, about the website that people can go to.
Right.
Get information. And again, you know, our friend Edie Tulchin is definitely a great lady to, you at bet. The very least, if you already have a factory that's producing your product, she is really well versed in understanding those results
mm-hmm.
and getting you a simplified list that anybody can understand so you can get your product made correctly. Very, very, very important today.
Yep. You know, and when you think about the patent aspect, you know, part of the criteria for patent is utility, you know, is it useful, and safety. Is can be one of the utilities. It's if you've got something that you're trying to distinguish between the prior art and yours is safer because of some novel aspect, you know, then that's going to satisfy the utility criteria.
Really?
Yeah.
So that could be a differentiator in terms of that could get you your patent just from that one element?
That's always possible, yes. Especially if it's novel and not obvious,
right.
The safety thing that you've put on there, then yeah.
Well, what about safety items themselves? I mean, that goes to a whole other level. Like, you know, when people have pools, you have to have these certain latches on gates.
Right.
And those are, I mean, there's a latch, and then there's a safety latch. So is that an example of something that just by virtue of the fact that it's got a certain hinge or the way it functions that makes it safe, that is patentable?
And I would say yes. You know, my youngest twin has got twins, okay?
Right.
And he's got one of those safety gates. And it took me a couple of seconds to figure out how to open this darn safety gate because you had to press two buttons on either side, okay, and then pull it back. You know,
right, like it's spring-loaded.
Yeah, spring-loaded. I mean, it's one of those things that the kids are not going to figure this out.
Right.
Okay.
It takes two adults, so you know a kid's not doing it.
Right. And then even on the doorknob that leads to their little sunroom and out to, like that, they retrofitted the doorknob with another plastic thing.
Well, I have those in my house
that you
now.
You have to
it's sit like there a plastic ball that fits over.
Yes.
You have to actually squeeze it.
Yeah.
And it takes an adult hand squeezing it.
Right.
Because a child's hand, the thing just kind of spins.
Right.
Okay. You mean that's patentable stuff right there.
Yeah. And even like I was just thinking when he was talking about the gate latch, the self-closing hinges. I mean, you have a hinge mm-hmm. and then a self-closing hinge. I mean, the basic premise is still the same, but you have this insertable pin, whereas you have the hinge, and then you have that pin that holds
right,
the hinges together,
it, right.
and then it's like got some kind of, I guess, spring action or something on it, and that when you open the door will automatically close behind you. And when I lived in New York, you had to have self-closing hinges on your gate if you had a pool.
Uh-huh.
So
okay.
it would just, because a lot of people would walk in the backyard and just forget to shut the gate, and then
yeah.
You know, a child could run in.
Right.
And those are considered attractive nuisances that you've got to
Now, I know in our pool, they have to have signs that say, like, warning, don't go in the pool when there's, like, there has to be a sign present on every fence in order, if someone's breaking in, to go in the pool.
Yeah, I know there's height restrictions, like, your fence has to be, like, 6 foot or 8 foot, and some, I mean, every state, I think, has their own laws, but I remember we had to have, the gate had to be a certain height. And you had to have these self-closing hinges
right.
on there. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, you couldn't get the
insurance?
Permit for the,
oh,
for the pool.
Oh, to build the pool?
Well, I don't know if it's – I think if I remember right, without going into a great story here, when we built the pool, when it's all done, an inspector from the town comes out
right.
and looks over everything, and you cannot get the permanent thing for your records unless the gate and all the safety issues were covered.
Yeah,
wow.
That I remember very clearly because the inspector, I met him, and he goes over to the gate, he opens the gate, yeah.
Right.
You know, in addition to other things. In fact, that was probably one of the bigger things.
Yeah, because I know that when a child is about 2 years old, maybe three, that's the real danger time for them, you know, getting into a pool and everything, especially if it's, you know, a pool that's at their house.
Right. No, they'll just walk right in. They don't have any.
Well, especially if the mother or the you know, caretaker just doesn't watch them just for a second, and boom, out they go.
Well, what about all these inventions that have cropped up from that? Like, you know, these alarms that sit on the surface of the water. So if something breaks the surface of the water, it sounds an alarm.
Right.
And you have then these little video camera things. I mean, the safety industry, we talk about safety, is a huge business. I mean, you talk about all those baby safety products.
Right.
I mean, I have kids in my house. You go into Home Depot, you go into Walmart, Target, anywhere. Babies are they have walls of, you know, safety products for, you know, locking up little counters and all kinds of things, doorknob things, everything.
But yeah. I guess that's kind of how the market adjusts to all the regulation, that all this regulation comes, and all of a sudden people are inventing products to protect you from the stuff that, you know, to help the regulation.
Yeah, because I remember when I was learning how to ride a bicycle, okay? You know, I'd skin my knee, you know, I would bang my head and all like that. Now they got kids riding bicycles with all these really fancy helmets and pads on their knees and on their elbows and everything.
Yeah, what happened to just not protecting yourself and breaking your arm? What's wrong with that? See, then they sell cast material for your arm.
Right.
And yeah, there's a business in good and bad things.
Remember when we were kids, they had the darts, the big lawn darts?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they were banned because, like, people were being impaled.
Well, you know, that's ridiculous. I mean, no matter what you get, what you create, somebody comes up with a product, somebody could hurt somebody with anything.
Right.
At what point do you say,
you know,
okay,
you gotta watch
enough's
out.
Enough, and pull things off the market? I mean, if something, you know, okay, if you have lawn darts and they are like razor blades, okay, got
right.
that. But
yeah.
You know what?
But, you know, kids would throw at each other. You know?
I mean, my kids have these Nerf,
right.
Nerf guns. I mean, conceivably, if I went up to, or one of my boys took it and
put it
in my eye, it's gonna, I can get hurt. But
that's
then they sell the little the glasses
the
for it and the helmets, and out of safety comes comes a whole
product.
Well, I remember, you know, I forget how old I was, but we were in school and we're playing dodgeball, okay? And I still remember, you know, visually seeing this ball coming, you know, from small to bigger and bigger right at my head, and kaboom, and then down I went, you know, with a black eye and the whole deal.
And that's why they banned dodgeball in schools.
That's right.
Because of Ron.
Because of face masks and everything else. But, well, I think the big thing that inventors have to know from this discussion we're having is that you can no longer ignore safety. It has to be considered no matter what your product is. You have to at least inquire and find out if it's something that needs to be evaluated. And if it does, you're going to spend some money and you're going to have to send it into an agency or a lab or one of these facilities, and they're going to have to check your product, make recommendations, and then you're going to have that interpreted either through somebody, by hiring somebody to do that, or you're going to hope that either you or your next door neighbor knows how to read those things. And then you're going to have your product made to spec and make sure that the factory does it.
Right.
And then you go through that whole process. And when you do, then at least you feel comfortable that when you go to market,
it's going
to
be safe.
You don't have to worry.
Yeah. And, you know, the tip for the inventor, the entrepreneurs, is that safety's got to be part of your business plan. You need to do it early.
Exactly.
And as the commercial says, you can pay me now or you can pay me later.
And think about it with on the patent side, before they even go ahead and start filing for patents, right, Ron? They should be talking about the safety issues or concerns that may impact.
Yeah,
right.
You got to think that through.
Design.
Yeah, because, you know, your patent strategy needs to support your business strategy.
All right, so hopefully everyone's got it.
Safety. And all the good links will be on the website.
Yes.
That's right. Well, this is, thank you, Jim and Lee and even Jay, Silent Jay over there. This has been another session of Launch, where we talk about things that entrepreneurs and inventors need to know.
Excellent.